Got it. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well. Come on in through the State Roofing text line at 98973. We love to hear from you. And I just got news from Dougie that Lou is over at his house chasing his chickens around. So I'm under a great deal of stress. I can't have Lou kill another chicken. Just saying. Is then what happens, right? They tie the chicken around its Lou's neck. And
you believe in the concept of freedom so much that you can't imagine chaining up your dog during the show. So he
won't get out. He got out. It's Jacob's fault. Stress
in rural life.
It is. Sweet Caroline. I don't know why this is her walk-on song.
I don't even.
All right, Jennings. We heard you on all the other stations. I mean, all the other shows. We're like, why don't she's on our show? Let's find out. You've been working hard on the fact that Washington State sent a tremendous amount of money to Nigeria. As we know, that the story was that that we did a great job. Oh, there, Lou's back. We did a great job of. Sending money to places that didn't deserve the money, that were not necessarily unemployed or laid off in the state of Washington. And you have found that the audit has found there's actually more money than they thought had left the state?
It looks to be so. It looks to be about $460 million more dollars than originally thought, than ESD originally reported. It may or may not be that much, but right now the auditor says it looks like it could potentially be that much, and that would be a total of more than $1 billion that went into hands that it shouldn't have gone into last year.
Now, the ESD, the Employment Securities Department, has strenuously objected to the auditor. Why don't you explain what's the heart of the controversy there?
Yeah, and ESD normally, all along, when these audit reports have been released, they've been releasing press releases on the same day saying, oh, we accept this advice. We mm-hmm. love getting feedback from the auditor. We're mm-hmm. working with them, you know, very much in line with what the auditor is saying. This time they came out with a really strongly worded press release, and they called this, quote, deeply flawed and inflated, this $460 million figure. They said that it included tens of thousands of claims that either were completely legitimate or that they had already pulled as possibly suspicious and had stopped paying out. So they said, we've got a handle on this. We're fine. The auditor is inflating this number. And then I followed up with ESD later, and they told me about $200 million worth of claims have already been resolved. So they say that number is far lower.
Yeah. And it's not that it's not that one side is lying and the other side is telling the truth.
From
my understanding of it is that this is the auditor. It was a really interesting comment from a legislator who said, the problem is that we might have hurried the auditor up saying, listen, we want to know before this session's over, we want to know what your results are. And as a result, the auditor didn't get all the information that they could have adjudicated these extra, you know, 300, 400 million claims. They didn't have enough time to do that. So that, in other words, ESD can be right and the auditor can be right, given what information they have each in their own possession, correct?
Yeah, and it is true that the auditor was trying to finish this up before the session ends in 10 days. So that is absolutely true. That said, Auditor McCarthy told me in our interview that these reports were based fully on the facts in front of them that ESD provided.
What we can report on are the facts that we've been able to verify. We allow entities to give their own point of view, and sometimes they disagree with what we put in our audits.
She also says that ESD will have a chance to update that information.
This is based on the information that we had provided by the ESD and that we were able to verify. And they will have an opportunity to be able to provide the data, and it may lower that number.
So it's not set in stone. I mean, it still could certainly be lowered. Another thing that might have contributed, I will say, is we know there was a little bit of back and forth tension last fall with ESD not necessarily getting the documents to the auditor as fast as they wanted. And the auditor even came out with a statement saying that ESD hadn't been entirely cooperative. And we know that one of these audits was supposed to be released around Christmas, and then they were hoping to release it January or February. Now it finally got released this week, so it put them a few months behind schedule. So, you know, maybe some of that back and forth, that upheaval might have contributed to not having entirely updated numbers. I don't know.
And ESD has had that very controversial leader, Susie Levine, who has, since this kind of debacle, has gone on to bigger and better things, it sounds like, in the Biden administration. Yeah. Did the auditor have anything to say about whether Susie Levine's departure helped in any way, or that she's working better with the the new person in charge, or is that a personality driven issue that's not really relevant to the auditor's work?
She didn't put it in those words or anything, but she did tell me that their relationship is good.
Okay.
We have a working relationship. We're going to continue to audit the ESD because our goal is just to be constructive here and to be able to provide information.
My sense of that was that things have improved in the last few months, and that would correlate with Susie Levine leaving and the new interim commissioner coming in, Cami Feek. And, my sense was that they're having a better relationship now that Levine isn't there.
Okay.
I wonder if not just the numbers, but then somebody looking at, okay, how did it happen and how do we not have it happen again? Because the pieces to the puzzle, you start to look at it, and apparently they knew that they had some problems earlier, that the software that they had put in place was overwhelmed, and that along the way they knew they still continued to have money going out. Will somebody do more of an internal sort of mechanism of what went wrong along the way, not just the fact that $1 billion or 900 million or whatever the amount of money that left, but why did this happen? Was it incompetency of the director? Was it a poor choice of programming that we got from that company there in Colorado? Checks and balances along the way to make sure that part of the government is functioning correctly. I wonder if anybody does any sort of dig into that kind of thing. Do you know, Nicole, or is it you're just working in the number audit side?
No, and I agree. Actually, what I made my headline, which was different from the other news outlets, my headline was about the fact that their security protocols weren't strong enough. To me, the number was kind of the secondary information. The most important piece of information was that they had all of these things they could have done to prevent this, and they weren't doing that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wonder why.
Well, it's funny because the auditor is coming down legitimately hard on
ESD. They have made a lot of changes since then, which is great on their part, but it's too little too late.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Okay. Even the auditor who has been coming down hard on the ESD has said that one of the things that they have to acknowledge that the auditor does is that they were so overwhelmed. This was so unprecedented. They were so overwhelmed. They were undermanned and unprepared for that, that it's an extraordinary situation. So she was sympathetic to the plight that ESD found itself under while still being critical.
Mm-hmm. Got it. All right. Thanks,
yes,
Nicole.
Exactly. And she did give them a long list of recommendations, and they have taken those.
That's great. Okay. Well, we appreciate it. And your story is up on my. There we go. Got her on. It's not fair. Nicole's doing all those other shows. Time. You do the morning show, you do the Gene Ursula, you get on the Tom and Curly and the Dory show as well. All right. So the good news for us is that the auditor will try to find out where the money went, and hopefully somebody does some digging in to find out. And Susie, as you mentioned, Tom, she is now on to bigger and better things in Washington, D.C. She's able to fail up, as they say. Democrat lawmakers to introduce a bill to expand the Supreme Court to 13 justices. Now, we had heard from Intercept, the story broke that Jerry Nadler out of New York, and I think another congressman out of New York, and then Markey in the Senate, they were going to take this forward. And then we hear that from Nancy Pelosi that she won't bring it up for a vote. But basically, it's court packing, as we have been talking about for a while now. And I know that President Biden was asked about it during the debates. Do you believe in adding more? Do you want to have more judges? He puts together a commission of mostly liberal Democrats with two sort of just token Republicans on board to be able to look in for 180 days, whether or not we should put more liberals on the court so we can, rather than 9, we could have 13, which would then allow more sort of activist judges pushing a Democrat or a liberal position as opposed to having what is now conservatives on there. So this is back in the news again, Tom.
Yes. I mean, so there is a bill indeed sponsored by four people, Nadler and in the House and Markey in the Senate are the two highest profile people. And the question is, why are they doing this? Well, clearly the progressives And I think, I mean, the Democratic Party in general, too, is still furious at Mitch McConnell for stopping the Merrick Garland nomination, you know, delaying it for a year, which allowed then Trump to get the replacement instead of President Obama. And then to rush, by comparison, the Amy Coney Barrett thing, which was even less time before the end of the term, before the presidential election. So right there, Democrats really feel like the Republicans screwed them at least one out of one seat and maybe even two seats. But consistency would say at least one seat. So they're really saying, well, this is ridiculous. The system is broken. We need to get back. And the best way to get back at it is to expand. The number of jurors. Now, historically, that's a flexible number. It's not like nine is set in stone. It has been in my lifetime I'm aware of, at least. Yes. So, but the argument, I think there is an argument. Let's take the politics out of it just for a second. Jerry Nadler says that there are 13 federal districts, and so 13 jurisdictions, and so that having 13 judges makes some sense. But we all know, and you could actually argue that independent of the politics of it, but everyone knows that this is an effort at the Democrats to try to get back at the Republicans for what they feel like was, you know, shoddy politics. The weird thing is that these guys are making this effort, but Joe Biden is on record, not since he's been president, but Joe calling it a boneheaded idea or something like that. And Nancy Pelosi says it's not even going to come to the floor of the House. So it's not even going to, you know, get up for a vote, even if this committee got this bill through.
Commit to bringing that bill to the floor?
No. I support the president's commission to study such a proposal. I don't know that that's a good idea or a bad idea. I think it's an idea that should be considered, and I think the president's taking the right approach to have a commission to study such a thing. It's a big step. It's not out of the question. It has been done before in the history of our country a long time ago, and the growth of our country, the size of our country, the growth of our challenges in terms of the economy, et cetera, might necessitate such a thing. In answer to your question, I have no plans to bring it to the floor. No.
Okay, there you go. Good. All right.
And do you think that
she cuts it down for a little while?
Yeah. You think this commission is going to then provide the cover for the Democrats and Joe Biden to actually try to, as you put it, pack the court? Because I don't think so. I don't think there's anything in this. It's a delaying tactic to kind of keep the progressives on hold. But I don't think that this is a cover, as has been suggested by some people, that, oh, he's just going to use this commission as a cover to end up doing exactly this. Because you have to break the filibuster. And right now, there's no indication that Joe Biden is willing to go against the filibuster. And you already have two Democrats on, you know, the record, Sinema of Arizona and Joe Manchin of West Virginia, saying they're not going to be for the filibuster, and no one thinks you can get 60 votes to, move the court up to 13. So I think this is a political stance, a lot of maneuvering, but I don't think if anyone's concerned about it coming to pass, I don't think that's going to happen.
What happens out of Washington, D.C. is when they decide, well, we're going to examine something, we're going to look into it, like whether it's this or a reparations bill. They then take a chunk of money and they say, we'll allow the commission to have X amount of dollars. Like, let's take the reparations thing, which we're supposed to talk about later on. So reparations is going to be looked at. So they're now going to take $12 million. They have all agreed. And the $12 million now will be spread out over various groups that will then take that money and use it up for whatever their causes are. So this same thing is happening here. So what they'll do is they have now allocated a certain amount of money for this group, this commission, to look at whether or not to court pack. Well, they have to write a check. So they're going to write a check for, I don't know how much is, a couple of maybe 20-some million dollars to look into that. Now, that $20 million will now be wasted by various political groups, mostly on the left, will then use that money. It's a way of sort of feathering the nest. So the reparations is the $12 million, for this thing is that, and after 180 days, they come back and say, well, we looked at it. Well, what you did was you took money off of the budget line, gave it to activist groups, they spent it. Same thing will happen with reparations. It won't go forward, but it's just a way of sort of taking some of the taxpayers' monies and doling it out to different special interest groups. So that's okay. And that's what this is. And that's basically the one way to sort of off budget move money over. Will they come back and actually try to throw another couple of on the court to get to 13 so that what you could do is you could actually win a presidential election. You could have somebody step down and then you could bring somebody up and nominate them and try to switch it. Right now, it's conservative leaning as opposed to liberal leaning rather than just throwing a bunch of liberals on. I think once that happens, the American people might start to really look at it more as a truly political body as opposed to,
yes,
you know, this branch that's supposed to be separated from all the mess that happens.
Oh, so, and so you would you prefer that? You would prefer it to be a baldly political institution?
No. I don't want it to be political because we have no other place to go. We don't have any other place to go. We have
that's
the people.
That's the concern of Breyer.
Right, Breyer, and the same thing with Ginsburg. Ginsburg said, you know, if we start doing that, and if all of a sudden the American people start to see this as just one more political body, well, then what? Then where do you go? Because they're, the Supreme Court, you can't take it above anybody else. You wouldn't want to take it to somebody like Nancy Pelosi or Representative Johnson, Hank Johnson, that fool, any one of these fools that are in Washington, D.C. You know that Hank Johnson's an idiot?
Mitch McConnell he's on the was commission. The one who manipulated the political process to get an extra conservative.
Did he manipulate it or did he use it?
I mean, yes.
No, Hank Johnson is on the commission. Yep. He's also the one that's concerned about Guam flipping over if you do too much infrastructure building on it. He's on the commission to look into whether or not to add more to the court.
The argument
I'm not
is
talking about Mitch McConnell is not on the commission to add more judges to the Supreme Court.
No, but he's the reason for that commission. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, right. Yeah. All right, Tracy Taylor, look at traffic for us on this Thursday. All righty, Keel Mortgage. All right, everybody, Keel Mortgage is the one to call. I can tell you right now that Laura Keel and the team that she has working for her best in the business. They're probably working from home still, I'm assuming, but you get outstanding customer service. You get the feeling that, well, am I the only customer? You were so fast returning emails, phone calls. It's Keel Mortgage, 1-888-778-KIEL. Best in the business. Get yourself a pre-approval letter or head on out and get yourself a refinancing, get the mortgage. By the way, interest rates are going up. I saw today that the Dow has hit a new record, that the economy is just on fire. This is just from the latest labor numbers that are coming out with people being hired and everything going on. A pretty good chance that mortgage rates will still continue to climb up. So cash that in, 1-888-778-KIEL. See that, Tom, that the stocks are just going nuts, nuts, nuts? Good news.
Yeah, it is good news. Thank you, Joe.
What'd Joe do? Dow tops 34,000 on the strong economic
thanks
data.
Thanks for that $1.9 trillion stimulus package.
That's what did
you always gave Donald credit, so I thought I'd hit you back by giving Joe credit.
I will say that I have seen lots of studies that show that the stock market normally does better when you have a Democrat in the White House than a Republican. And I'm always like, well, really? Blah. And I look at him like, oh, okay. Statistically speaking, that tends to often be the case. So that's good, yeah. But, the numbers are wild. So if everybody's in the stock market, 50% of Americans are, you're reaping the benefit of us spending money that we don't have. Eventually, somebody has to pay the bill. So we'll see how that goes. It will be a nightmare for one some. It's Tom, and there's your segue into the story that Jacob felt was so interesting. You ever met a guy that's under the age of 30 that cares more about sleep and dreams and napping than Jacob? He's like a large old dog or something like that. Constantly. How about this story about naps? How about this story about dreams? How about this story about sleep? How about we not getting enough sleep? I'm like, you're 25 years old. Come on. Live like Governor Inslee would say.
Take it outside.
He's into altered states of consciousness. That's what I think. Jake
that's what it is.
There you go. And so this idea about dreams. It's probably no huge revelation that nightmares can be good things. This is an example of a bunch of a sleep study that said that if you have nightmares, is that reason to be concerned or not concerned? And they mentioned that in times of stress, and they mentioned they did a study of 10 to 12-year-olds living in the Gaza Strip, you know, so they're living under constant stress, kind of chronic stress. For a lot of people, the pandemic this past year has been a life of chronic stress. And because of that, you tend to have more bad dreams, more nightmares. Mm-hmm. So this is an examination of, is this a problem or not? And the ultimate thrust, there's a lot of fascinating little details in here, but the ultimate thrust is that nightmares serve a couple of functions. One is, it lets you, what happens in sleep is that we process our memories of the day and sort of like file them away. And as we do that, if there was something that had emotional resonance or was really bothering you, that a dream and obviously a nightmare, if it gets extremely negative, is the way of trying to strip an emotionally powerful happenstance or thought, strip it of its emotional power. In some ways, you're sort of saying, okay, that happened. Now I'm going to try to take away the nightmare part of it. Will be me exercising my demons. And then once I get through that nightmare, then I'll be okay. The other version of this is, I don't need to dominate the conversation here, but just to get to the other.
I'll tell you how you can make yourself have a nightmare.
Okay, well, that's good. Listen to the Tom and Curly show, right?
Yeah.
So the other thing they say is it also, if you're having anxiety, which is happens under stressful situations, it's a way for your brain to kind of help process what you're most anxious for. So if you have a big meeting with the boss, say tomorrow, they said, you can kind of anticipate your fears, your anxieties about having that meeting. If you can process them through nightmares in your own, dream processes, you'll be more relaxed. And dreams and nightmares allow you to regulate your emotions more effectively. And that's all good and true unless it's chronic. If you have chronic nightmares, if you have like 4 or 5 nightmares a week, that's a problem. But if it's just the occasional nightmare, then that's actually your body and your dream life working at its best.
Sleep on your stomach.
Okay.
Eat certain foods before going to bed, spicy or salty.
Okay.
What are you laughing at? Try to scare yourself just before going to bed. Watch something online. See something that's upsetting to you. And then quickly throw yourself down onto the bed, onto your stomach. Consider taking vitamin B6. That apparently has something to do with it. Jacobs probably already have all these things. Melatonin also helps as well. But overall, they say that those are the studies that say that for people that would like to induce a nightmare, those types of things happen. What? I certainly would watch. You know, I didn't mean to watch this thing yesterday, and I put my finger over the screen. I was slipping through some stuff before going to bed. I'm listening to East of Eden. Oh, my God.
Oh,
what a beautiful
Steinbeck.
Book.
Yeah.
Steinbeck. And I stopped for a moment. I was looking at something. I was going to send Jacob some stories. And then it was this horrible thing of this guy getting hit by a car. And then, oh, my God. I thought, do I need to see this just before going to bed? It came on. And I go, And then another car hit the guy. And I thought, this has got to be like, not, this isn't real. It actually happened in L.A. And it was this horrible story. I was going to send it to Jacob, but I didn't want to give him nightmares. Then I decided to read the story real quickly. How to make yourself have an LSD trip or something similar to it by using your cell phone. This is the other one where you can have your phone turn on and flash lights in your face. And if you do it correctly, the app will make you feel like you're tripping.
Yeah, this is... This is an amazing story, and I'm pretty skeptical. So the writer says he started off skeptical, but he says, but it's a pretty darn effective. And so because we're going to talk about nightmares, we had you try to, see something horrible right before you went to bed so you could have a nightmare. Yeah. We also put Jacob through this particular ringer, and now he can tell us what it's like to have a strobe light effect on your consciousness and see if you can actually make yourself high.
Yeah. What'd it do to you? Did it make you high there, Jacob? Huh? No, you're crazy now on the strobe light, are you? Smack, white?
I've not done some of the drugs that they're describing that this is similar to, so I can't speak to it directly in terms of how good it is, but I would say that it was something interesting. There were some interesting images, although I will also say, different to the guy that wrote this article, I feel like the experience wore off pretty quickly, where at some point you just kind of, get back into your own brain and you realize, yeah, like my phone flashlight is just pointed at me and it's just strobing a little bit. But it was interesting for about a minute, I'd say.
And how long did it take you to get into that 1 minute of interesting space?
Oh, that,
5 minutes?
Honestly, no, right away. It was very quickly.
Really?
But then you're okay. Over it fairly quickly as well.
So a shallow experience, but an experience nonetheless.
I think that's how I would describe it, yeah.
There you go. William Burroughs, I think, tried to come up with some sort of dream machine that would do the same sort of thing.
Yeah, I
remember
think
that,
that's
Tom?
Right. Yeah. Yes,
wasn't he also the guy that shot the woman with the? Was it the?
Yes,
shot the apple off the person's head.
Yep, killed her
with
I
an
think.
Arrow. Killed her. Yeah,
his
Jacob,
wife.
Did that kind of thing happen to you when you were? Uh-huh. With the arrow and the apple.
That was a
the,
nightmare. No? That wasn't the trip. That was the nightmare.
Okay, I just. Wait, yeah. So where's my apple and my arrow?
It made me commit a murder. Did I not lead with that part?
Always
allegedly,
bearing the lead.
Allegedly, right, Jacob?
Allegedly, Jacob. Allegedly. All right, Tracy Taylor, look at traffic for us, please. All right, here we go. Is this thing you've been working on, Sean?
Oh, well, apparently you're going to talk about a man who was fined for farting on cops.
Oh, yes, yes.
And he's arguing that farts are a protected form of expression. So I was asked to spice up a bit of audio that you sent to Jacob.
Yes. Right. Yes. Where did this happen, Tom? Was this in Australia?
Austria.
Oh, boy.
So in Europe.
So the guy, he's talking to the police, and while the police are, I guess, questioning him, he proceeds to break wind. And then this becomes a case of, is it freedom of speech? Are you allowed to do that? Is it somehow offensive? Are you insulting or assaulting the police by breaking wind in their presence?
Yes. Farting on a police officer is apparently against the law in Austria, but it wasn't determined to be such until a judge actually ruled on this. And the guy who farted, his defense was it's protected speech. That a fart is a form of expression. And the judge, I think, misread this or misjudged it because he says, listen, I understand a burp or a fart can be socially inappropriate, but it is not communicative, which I think is ridiculous. I think a lot of things that aren't formulated in words are communicative, and I think farting in someone's general direction can be seen as a very pointed comment, an expression, and I think he shouldn't have ruled as such.
I agree, and I sent this to Sean. I said, so Sean, could you please, so this is a scene from Dragnet, and that this could easily have been happening in, where is this, Austria?
Austria.
Can you tell us what you did today starting at noon, Granberg? I don't know if I can or not. I don't keep a daily log, you know. They didn't tell me I had to do that.
Just tell us where you were between noon and six tonight. That's all we want.
Well, that's quite a bit, don't you think? Suppose I told you I was playing canasta with a maiden aunt. Would that shock you?
Look, mister, we're not in the mood for smart answers. You just tell us where you were, that's all.
I don't know why you always have to bother me every time something happens.
You're out of order, Your Honor. You're out of order.
Oh, that was Sean, so fun to create.
Sean,
what?
Sean,
what?
I said, lightly. I said, spice it up lightly. What was that last one? I'm surprised his intestines didn't come out.
Well,
just you.
You said, like, lightly. How Jacob described it to me was have it start off lightly and gradually get. You know, more intense. So that's what I did.
Boy, can the FCC come down on us for indecency here?
By the way,
it's a free speech, Tom. We have a First Amendment right.
Yeah, we're not,
we're
non-commutative. That scene from Dragnet, so that was a scene from Dragnet where there was a girl who was, the body was found and she had been, you know, assaulted. And they went to this guy, and because he was a child, you know, he, oh my God, it's, you watch that show. And it's like, wow, it is a timepiece, Tom. Have you ever watched the, like, Dragnet now and seen how they talk to people and the stereotyping?
Just the facts,
that guy was—he was a child, you know. He was like, he did something, some kid a while ago, or whatever. And guess what he does? He works in a bar in a saloon playing an organ. It's like, really? I mean, who wrote that? And that was him being questioned and breaking wind. Thank you, Sean. That's some of your best work today.
Oh, thanks.
The judge ruled that even if it was a form of expression, a fart transcends the boundaries of decency. And I think that's what our segment just did. We just.
Can you tell us what you did today, starting at noon, Granberg?
I don't know if I can or not. I don't keep a daily log, you know. They didn't tell me I had to do that. Just tell us where you.
I don't even know how to follow up with that one.
You don't need to.
Yeah.
You don't.
Okay,
that was not how I planned it. That was not how I planned it. I'm sorry,
got
Tracy.
It.
I'm very sorry.